Welcome to another edition of Expanding Mind. I'm your host, Eric Davis, and we're going to continue to explore the cultures of consciousness. I've had a month off from the podcast, and a very busy time traveling about. I think I flew more flights than I've ever done in a month, giving talks, meeting friends, having fun, and basically continuing to explore this curious nexus where the internal subjective flow of emotions, images, memories, and tastes and desires encounters the strange collective world of cultures, machines, and the most mysterious thing, other human beings. So our guest today had to cancel because of a rather dramatic event in his life. And so Maj and I decided to have another conversation where we just pick a topic and start riffing, because the last time we did that somewhat spontaneously, we got a lot of positive feedback for it, so I think it's probably going to become more regular part of the show, and something that we can easily jump to when, as is the case today, our guest mysteriously disappears. So so what do you say, Maja? Should we get into it?
Yeah, let's get into it.
Well, let's we were talking before about, you know, what should we talk about, and one of my reactions this morning, it was kind of interesting, you know, it's like, here's this guy, we're going to do this conversation, and, you know, he lets me know that there's been, you know, a death in the family, and there's this immediately this sort of shift, and he's like, you know, give me a call, we'll talk about rescheduling the show, and I already feel, like, uncomfortable, like, what, I don't know what to say, I don't really know the guy,
yeah.
And, you know, so we call, there's this kind of awkward conversation, and it's this strange thing, because the most intense experiences and, you know, terrible feelings, trauma, intense emotional disasters, terrors, etc. I mean, they're so ordinary. They're so much a part of our ordinary life, and yet we don't know how to deal with them. I don't know how to deal with them. I didn't know what to say. He didn't know what to say. He didn't know where he was, you know. And yet these things, they're everywhere. You know, if I pay attention, I you know, follow 1 or 2 degrees of separation from me and my friends, there's this kind of traumatic experience all the time. So that's what I want to talk about. I want to talk about these sort of heavy emotions, intense emotions, whether stuff that's happening now or in the past, that we, you know, it's obviously part of the weave of human life. And yet it remains one of the things we keep stumbling over. We don't know how to think about it. We don't know how to talk about it. We don't know how to process it. And yet we all end up getting to process it.
It's so dumb. Like, this stuff happens, like you said, it happens to, like, literally, there's no people that are spared some kind of traumatic event. Over the course of your life, even if you have, like, the raddest life ever, even when you're dying, that'll be, like, traumatic. So, like, I don't see how any single human being can avoid it altogether. There's going to be something messed up that happens eventually. So you'd think after the thousands and thousands of years, we would have figured out, like, you know, like how people make shoehorns or melon ballers, like some kind of tool or technique to make dealing with that a little easier.
Absolutely. I mean, you're in this interesting place where, because you do oracles for folks, that you wind up being sort of an occult psychologist, because of course people come to you with all these problems, and so you get to see this sort of steady flow of issues and concerns and freak outs.
Almost everyone you can think of has probably run across my desk. Everything from murder, death, abortion, suicide, loss of business, relationship stuff, drug addiction, health issues, like, you name it. I pretty much deal with all of those emotions that come up in people and their reaction to these traumatic events. And they come because they don't know what the hell to do, you know?
Well, let's just take that moment that I was describing before, when someone comes to you and they tell you something terrible, you know, terrible that's happening in their lives. And even then, in that moment, I rarely feel instant compassion. What I mostly feel in that first second is my incapacity of responding appropriately. Like, I'm aware of the way in which I'm here, they're over there, and then, you know, compassion might come out of that, or understanding, or a listening ear, suggestions, or conversation, or whatever might be the response. But my basic kind of feeling is like, I don't know what to do, I don't know what to say, I don't know what to deal with.
That's totally normal. You literally have to get trained to have the proper response. If people think like there's something wrong with them because they don't know how to respond to trauma, it's not your fault. You literally have to train your own self in order to react to trauma. Like, you'll deal with it with the emergency people, right? Anyone that runs in the ambulance, they have to go through special training to be able to know how to react when messed up stuff happens. Because you know what happens? When something messed up happens, you know what everybody does? They stand around and they stare, and they all have a trauma inside them, even dealing with the trauma. So they'll always have to be like one general person, like one of those hardcore people that's like, hey, you know, we got to like take care of this.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. So what about you? Like, I mean, so you've been, you know, working with people, you know, for years now, quite, you know, and more recently quite a lot. How have you found your way towards being able to be grounded, but specific, you know, like the really responding to people?
Well, a lot of that is just, first of all, having to deal with firsthand experiences in my own life, like, because I got subjected to all kinds of trauma. So there's like, you just deal with it personally, you know it, you've been through it, that sure helps a lot, right? The second thing is just from dealing with enough people's issues, you'll see the pattern. So you'll get enough individuals that come in, like one person, they're just broken, their life is ruined. Then you get another one, their life is broken, they don't know what's going to happen. And then you get another one. So you start, even though all of their traumas are different, there'll be little things that stick out, like in terms of patterns that happen to like almost everybody, right? So once you can see the relationship of their trauma to that archetype of trauma, you kind of know like what to do, right? Now, I've been through enough death. If someone tells me they just had somebody die, I know, like, that deal. I know what that story is. You know what I mean?
Well, does it tend to be more, like you said, archetype? I mean, does it tend to be more kind of universal, or are there really just 1,000 different ways to deal with it? I mean, that's the thing with trauma is that, you know, one of the things that I said to this fellow today was like, I said, you know, I don't know what to hope for you, that you have lots of time and space to go through all the process you have to do, or that you have tons of other crap that you have to do that will pull you back into the world immediately. And I was like, is that because I don't really understand the universality of like the grieving process, or is it because we really do respond to trauma in such different ways that it's really hard to know what to say or suggest or how to respond to somebody? Which of those do you think it is?
I think it's a combo, dude. Even for the hundreds of ways people can all respond to the same trauma. Like, look at an earthquake. You can have lots of people in an earthquake. They may see a bunch of people die in front of them. Each person is going to have a different reaction to that trauma, okay? So they'll all react emotionally differently. But the thing where it jumps to universal is that regardless of how they choose to emotionally react to that trauma, the trauma itself was the same. The energy of it was the same. The archetype of it was the same. It was earthquake, right? So if we're going to deal with healing that trauma and talking to people, even though they all had a different reaction, you can address them all on the same level, which is healing the trauma and dealing with the trauma. You know?
Well, because it is the case that I think this is true for a lot of people, that there really is something, there is a kind of, I don't want to say relief, but there's a greater intelligence in the process by recognizing the universality of it. I mean, I know that when, you know, let me take a really strong affect, and when I wake up in the middle of the night, this doesn't happen as much as it used to, but I used to wake up in the middle of the night and totally freak out and, you know, I'm going to die. You know, there's death is good everywhere. I'm going to die. You know, and you're like, and I, you know, right now I know I'm going to die. I could think about it. I'm not freaking out for whatever reason. Maybe I'm just denying the situation. But it really helped to start to go like, yes, death is totally terrifying. And, you know, the idea of actually being on the edge of it and being overwhelmed with all of those emotions and ones I can't even anticipate is terrifying. But there is some, and I won't say solace, but there is some kind of greater kind of intelligence to those feelings when I recognize that everybody has gone through this and everybody will go through this. And it takes it out of like, because part of the pain, I think sometimes to trauma is the sense that your little ego now has the real story. Like, now I know that my little ego, you know, totally has the right to be obsessed with itself because it really has had this horrible thing happen to it. Whereas if you can pull it out of that singularity, and recognize the universal dimension, you can kind of chill out a little bit.
Well, because people will, they take it egotistically. Like, if some terrible thing happens to them, everyone does the little kid thing, right? First they think, oh, this was my fault. Then they think, oh, this couldn't happen to me. And then they, like, you go through all those stupid stages, you know, of denial. And then you, with the way we process it is, it's stupid. It's so trite. So if you can break out of that part of like, no, it's not just you, dude. This is like a thing that happens in the world. I feel like that is the key to getting over any of it, is going to be the ability to break out of it. Just like if you have, let's say you have a terrible breakup. You have the worst heartbreak ever on the face of the planet Earth. But oh my God, you can listen to this song. Like maybe you'll listen to a country western song or something and be like, oh man, they totally know what I'm doing, what's happening. Like, they know. Like, and then you feel better.
Yeah, that's an amazing thing. The way that this, like, even trite, and you know, songs that are trite precisely because they're made to be universal. They're made to be something that everybody can appreciate, so they have that lowest common denominator element, which can be make for great pop music sometimes, but often makes for a lot of dreck. Nonetheless, can have the most profound, intimate resonance because I think what we're pointing to is that there's something in trauma that simultaneously connects us to the most specific qualities of our particular story, our ego, our aloneness in the world.
Yeah,
and it connects those directly to the things that are the most universal and the most widely distributed that we can imagine.
Yes, it's true, dude. There's nothing, no better way to go right into your like depths of your shadowy self than to have some kind of trauma that will. And I think you're right. I think it's because it causes you to question, like, your identity, like your ego, like having being confronted with something like that. It's like you really question reality because you think everything's cool, everything's normal, right? You have this regular life, you know, maybe you're with a person, everything's cool, and then all of a sudden, in a second, everything is gone, everything has changed, nothing you thought was true is true. Then you have like an existential crisis.
You know, I can't get this thing about the songs out of my head because I was going to tell the story, and then I said, no, that's too personal, but I'm going to go ahead and tell it because it's so funny. So I had my mom visited. We have a great relationship. We're really close, but there's, you know, heavy stuff there like there is, you know, in most family relationships, probably. I almost said all family relationships. And, you know, it was just sort of a melancholic visit. It didn't quite work, and it was kind of sad, and, you know, I don't see her enough, and, you know, there's parts we haven't connected on, da-da-da-da. And so I dropped her off at the airport, and I was feeling pretty sad, you know. I was just kind of, but it was sort of nameless. It wasn't anything specific. I wasn't resentful about anything, or it wasn't like, you know, we had a fight or anything like that. It was just this kind of nameless melancholy that seems to ghost a lot of human relationships. And I'm driving away, and I turn on the radio, and there's this sort of plaintive saxophone, and it's just this kind of, you know, these minor chords, and it's like really mirroring how I'm feeling. I'm really like, anyhow, and I start kind of weeping, and the song lets me have a space to kind of like acknowledge that there's some deeper emotion going on that I really want to talk about with anybody or anything. And so I like go through that experience, and it's, you know, kind of meaningful. And then the song is kind of ending, and as it's ending and my cry is kind of closing, I get this kind of creepy feeling. I said, I think there's something wrong here. And then the radio guy came on and said, well, that was the latest cut from Kenny G.
Oh, no.
So I had this profound experience mediated by, like, the ultimate figure of, like, bad taste. Like, someone who's just, you can't recuperate it. No hipster sort of, like, guilty pleasure can touch Kenny G. You just can't.
That's
you can't
true.
Do it. And but that's
you
the beauty of it, because that's
G.
that moment where you have to go, it's not like my ego that wants to be cool, that wants my own emotions to be special. It's like even that can't withstand these collective seas of emotion.
Totally. That's like the best example I've ever heard. But it is, that's an important component of it, dude, is that we try to separate ourselves in our suffering. Like, look at every angsty teenager. They all want to withdraw. They all want to become the outsider because they suffer. No one in the world can know my suffering. I am unique and have the most pain and intense depth of everybody. And then what we forget is that suffering is one of the main things that connects all of us as human beings. Like, the one way, what do we do, like, when we're really good friends with people, right? We bitch to them about all of our problems. Like, what unites us with our loved ones is, you know, those hard moments that we have to go through. I mean, obviously, fun times are good for that, too, and you can bond in joyous ways as well. But when your world collapses, who are you going to go talk to? You know, your fun time people, or do you go to your, you know, your emotional people that you can talk to? That's the connection. Suffering is the connector.
No, absolutely. And I think that we miss something else by when we think of emotions or challenges as being totally personal, totally our own, which is that these emotions, like the experiences themselves, have this collective quality, which means that they travel through humans as a group. You know, it's like if something bad happens to your spouse, like suddenly it's out there and everybody's kind of dealing with it. It's sort of like a hot potato. It's like you got to spend your time with it and move it along. But in a way, it's outside of any single person's viewpoint, which is not, again, the way it feels when it's just, you know, when it's just happening to you. But the question I have for you when you see people come through is that we've been talking about, you know, semi-serious or serious trauma, deaths, you know, maybe go from like bad breakups, you know, to heavy, to even more heavy stuff, drug addiction, da 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 da. But it's also the case that there's this kind of like, you know, and I see this in myself, this sort of like really ordinary level of like everyday misery where we might be, you know, complaining and unhappy and depressed. Nothing's really going on. We're not really getting down to the root of our personal traumas or facing the suffering of the world or whatever. We're just kind of, this is kind of generic stuff. And so I'm curious, as you see people come to you who are like motivated sometimes by really extreme things and sometimes by this kind of stuff, how do we tell the difference? Like, is it, you know,
I just had a client where it was like kind of like that, right? It was, and I do, I get them several times. And usually for me, the way that I can tell the difference is, you know, I have tools that I use. I'll use I Ching or I'll use tarot cards, and it'll go one of both ways often. Like, for example, I have these women coming complaining about their relationship. They think their partner's cheating on them, blah, blah, blah. But it, like you said, there's really nothing going on. They don't have any problems. They're coming in because they're just trifling. So usually the tarot cards of the I Ching just calls them out on it and says, listen, this is all you. So, but that is an important thing to recognize, is that part of our trauma and our psychological, like, methods of dealing with emotions like that is almost entirely self-generated, right? It's actually just all our own brain messing us up and causing us this daily misery. So then you have to say, like, okay, how do you distinguish the one that's doing that from someone who's really legitimately received a trauma, right? The answer is they're both suffering. And whether you're just doing it to yourself and making stuff up and complaining, or repeating this traumatic behavior pattern because you're actually legitimately experienced something messed up, like a war or whatever, the end result is the same. It's misery. It's suffering. So really, dealing with those people, it doesn't matter who's coming from where. I only look at the result. Like, is it suffering? Is it trauma? Okay, then you just treat that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that opens up this because we've been mostly talking about, you know, current traumas, things that are just happened or happening in our lives. But then once you go in and you start poking around the traumas that make us who we are,
yeah,
then,
our,
you know,
story,
then things get so, so complicated, because even that person who's miserable and they're just complaining because they have they have a paper cut and they were late for work or whatever, and it's like this huge thing. There's no way to know, and oftentimes they don't know, that this has all been set in motion because of these traumas they suffered when they were a kid, from their parents, even, you know, genetic stuff.
Well,
that comes
check
through.
This out. So I got this one guy in, this one client came in. He was just, like, in for fun, right? He had no idea. He just came in to get a fun reading. And so he asks about this girl that he's interested in dating. So his question was super innocent. Just ask about this girl he's flirting with. The cards reveal his, like, whole psychological sex, you know, makeup, and talk about how it's all, he's, like, kind of punishing women because of his intelligent mother. And it got all up into his childhood trauma and crisis, and he started crying, like, it just all came out on the table. So it was, like, a really good extractive tool to get into his personal traumas, and he had, like, you know, was just expecting to find out some cute information about a girl. You know?
Yeah, that's pretty, it's like, sorry, guy.
Yeah, he was, like, shocked. He was like, I can't believe this just happened.
Well, that's funny, too, because, I mean, I think a lot of what, you know, at least part of us does, part of our ego or whatever, is that we have a sense that it's a world of trauma out there, that if there's not trauma coming down the pike, that there's historical trauma somewhere in your city, around the block, and people you know. And even if you're not thinking about that, that if you go into your past, there's, like, a whole world of hurt. And
yeah.
So we want to avoid it. We want to distract ourselves, you know. And then a lot of the appeal of distraction, a lot of the way people socialize, a lot of the way people consume entertainment, take drugs, etc. Yeah, there's a life force there. There's an element of celebration, of joy. But a lot of time, especially when you start wrestling with this stuff, a lot of time it starts to look kind of hollow, kind of like the way you wave your hand at a kid when he's crying. Go, oh, no, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. And and once you start to see that stuff, then it becomes, you know, it becomes harder to even go through the sort of ordinary, goofy stuff we do as human beings, because you kind of have a sense that not only is there a world of trauma out there, but you're actually kind of avoiding the thing. So it's a real tough one to you know, because sometimes I think, like, hey man, maybe we should be spending a lot more time with this stuff. But is that just a morbid or pessimistic or negative kind of way of thinking about it? And I'm really of two minds about it.
Well, it's a delicate balance, Eric, because listen, like you said, once you have some kind of trauma like this, like you do, I call it the Frodo Baggins syndrome, okay? Frodo Baggins in The Lord of the Rings, he goes to frickin' Mordor. Like, he goes into the heart of the volcano. he deals with the gnarliest darkness in the world. And then he's got to go back to the Shire. And so he goes back to his house. Everyone's all happy, like, oh, they don't know. They didn't go to Mordor. And he can't hang with them anymore, right? He can't do it anymore. He can't. It's all, like, fake and baloney because inside his heart, he's been to Mordor. So I think what happens, Eric, when we have something like this, all those distractions that are available to us, TV, drugs, drinking, when you have a profound, legit experience like that, everything seems fake that is not on that epical level of Mordor. So you kind of, like, even if you pretend and you try to go back into it, I think if you don't at least deal with it a little bit, then you're going to go like a little psycho. You know, I don't know if you're going to make it. You're going to get taken down, right? You're going to get it just building inside of you and eating you from the inside out. But on the other hand, if you go too far into it, just deal with this trauma and grief and terrible things that happen in the world every day, you're not going to make it, right? You're going to get annihilated if all you do is think about all the horrible things. Even if all I did was think of all the horrible things happening in Los Angeles at this second, it would be incapacitating.
Yeah, and it would bum everybody out, too. That's part of the other thing is that nobody really wants to hear it. I was thinking about this because about a couple months ago we had Jason Horsley on the show. It was a really interesting discussion, and he talked about trauma in that conversation in really interesting ways that got me thinking. And then I had the opportunity to meet him a couple of weeks later. He was one of my voyages this last November was to Mexico, where he and I were participating in a conference. So I got to hang out with him a while. Very interesting guy. He's on a very powerful, very interesting path. But part of his path is really not going for the distraction. I mean, he's in it. He is sitting and looking and talking from a place of disenchantment, in the sense of looking at a lot of the stuff that he'd been into as being kind of a distraction from some of the fundamental traumas that shaped him through family, through being a human being, through being in the world that we're in today. And he's right there, and he's very intelligent, and he's a very sweet guy. But I could see, even in sort of the way in which he was moving through these sort of social worlds where people are chatting and they're just meeting, da da da, that's a tough road to hoe. And yet there was a kind of authenticity about him and
like
a depth about him that was really powerful.
Was he a bummer, or was he able to, like, you know, be cool?
He was cool about it, but even that's what I'm saying. It's not like where you're just indulging in the pathos of it, because you can't do that.
You can't
intelligently go through, you know, trauma, your own or the world's, in a deep, long-term way, and stay in the sentiment. You can't just be in the emotional element of it. It's got to become deeper than that, and calmer or more mature or something like that.
Otherwise,
you're just setting off like all these crazy reactive emotions. I mean, the emotions are too reactive to be able to really integrate trauma and suffering to the degree that we can integrate it, which we can't do. But it was more that even though he was being cool, I could still see the way that I think people even unconsciously were kind of like, whoa, this guy is like kind of different, you know, because he was willing, you know, to really look at it. I mean, it's something that I see also with some, you know, some of the more powerful spiritual teachers that I've been around, is that part of their power, and sometimes it can even be sort of an illusion, I mean, in the sense that they're not as wise as they might seem, but part of their power is that they go for the really difficult sticking place, and they just lodge there, and they say, hey, this is part of reality. You guys up for it or not? If you're not up for it, whatever. But if you're up for it, it's pretty powerful. It's pretty kind of intense. So it's a you know, it can be a real practice as well going into this stuff.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like you got to be like the river, man. You got to get in the river and flow with it and then scoop back out, you know. But most people won't even get in there to look at it. So it's true. It's you have to look at it. You have to get in there, you know, rub it all over yourself, breathe it in, smell it, you know, be it, eat it. And then you got to go, you got to roll on to the next thing that shows up. You got to keep moving like a shark, because if you don't, you're going to get tripped up in some stupid emotion, and it's going to get you. It's going to have you, you know?
Absolutely. Well, this is good stuff. I'm enjoying this. Hope you are all enjoying it out there, but we're going to take a break now. You're listening to Expanding Mind from the Progressive Radio Network, and me and Maja are having our monthly chat. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Expanding Mind on the Progressive Radio Network. This is Maja Daou, and we're here speaking with Eric Davis today. We're doing our little ramble on emotions and trauma and how to really deal with them and approach them and integrate them into your life. And right before the break, Eric, we were talking about you know, the importance of getting into the thing, going through it, and then getting out. But so along those lines, I mean, that's it. Like, how do you deal with trauma? How do you do it? How do you look this stuff in the eye? How do you, like, go about it? Like, if you saw someone get murdered in front of your face, how are you going to deal with that? Like, what are some methods? Have you come across any particular trauma dealing methods that you or, like, experienced yourself that were profound to you?
You know, they've all been sort of longer term in the sense that they're like slow and steady, as opposed to, you know, we're so often tending towards the quick fix. And in my situation, I would say that the ability to have dialogue with, you know, trained people, with therapists mm-hmm. or whatever, who can create a space where you can be close to the experience, the event and its meanings for you, but allow some of the more reactive emotions to kind of trickle away. So it's sort of like, how do you stay close to, it's a monster or a wild animal, and it's in the room, and if you freak out and yell, everything's just going to go south, and everything's running around, and it's going to bite you, and da-da-da. But it's like, if it's just sitting there, you can't get away. You're in the room with it. Be calm down. There. It's not any better. It's not, but it works on a different level. And I think we can get there, you know, through, that's where meditation, that's where a certain kind of you know, therapy can work, where you're sort of holding yourself. You know, I think earlier you mentioned this idea of control, and the idea of controlling emotions sort of has a bad rap in our generation. You know, we grew up with the idea of, you know, not controlling emotions. You know, that's the repressive old school way, and now we have to explore them and let them all out and all that, and that has its place. But I think in some ways we've gone a little too far that way, and yeah. I think that there are ways of holding emotion that aren't about tamping it, you know, stamping it down and putting it in a box and hiding the box in the basement, but really more like holding it, sort of like not trying to flee from it, but kind of still keeping some kind of control or some kind of space around it. And that's a skill that I don't feel that we really learn, that we get much support from the society. It's more like, no, let the emotions out, and if you can't deal with it, go to a therapist and they'll take care of it, or they'll give you a drug or even some kind of practice that'll help deal with it. But I think there's some way that we still make decisions to hold space, to hold the toxins. I think that you might remember the myth better than I do. I'm not so good on the details of myths, but there's this element in Hindu cosmology where there's, you know, the great cosmic ocean, and it's got this poison in it, and Shiva holds, he like takes the poison and he holds it in his throat. He doesn't swallow it, but he holds it in this incredibly intimate way. I mean, that's where the blueness of Shiva's skin comes from. And that idea that we swim in toxins, you know, whether they're physical toxins or bad ideas or terrible emotions or the results of terrible deeds, and it's a toxic environment. But we can't escape those toxins. So we have to learn somehow how to hold them, to be balanced enough or holistic enough that we can keep them without just taking them on. And there's something about that that seems to offer a different way towards dealing with trauma and difficult emotions than I see that people often pursue.
Totally, dude. And that's alchemy. You become the vessel that holds the toxic mercury, the poisonous, venomous mercury, which of course is usually our mind, right? Just your brain that, because of how it thinks and feels about stuff, it makes poisons in your body. How do you hold that? How do you change it? How do you deal with it?
Yeah.
Right? So, and that was what you were mentioning earlier about going and talking about it, like do all these processes, go through stuff. That was, we were talking earlier, I've been really into researching this thing lately that a client told me. I had a German client, and I was describing this to her, and she said, she put it in a word, and I was like, oh, that's so great. Repeat to master. And basically, what we do when we have a trauma or something like that, we just go over it again and again and again, and we relive it, right? You'll get haunted by the images. You just cry. It'll, like, keep coming up. There'll be triggers for it, right? If you see a picture of the dead person, up, now the trauma's back again. If you see a picture of, you know, whatever reminds you of it, now it's like a repetition. And why do we do that? Like, why do we keep repeating it over and over? We'll look for relationships or similar situations, right? If we saw a murder, we'll get into gang situations, or, you know, you name it. Like, people will psychologically reaccommodate their trauma over and over and over. And Sigmund Freud had this thing that he talked about. He calls it repeat to master. Like, the reason we keep trying to do it and go over it is so that we can hold the poison. It's like using your Shiva example, it's like if we're giving ourselves like homeopathic doses of the trauma over and over to try to like build our immune system to it, you know?
Yeah, and I think one of the important keys to remember here is that most of the time that those repetitions are happening, they're unconscious. I mean, that's why we all know people who like keep dating the same kind of bad guy or girl, and finding themselves in the same kinds of situations over and over again. It's not that they're consciously repeating some, you know, traumatic relationship or problematic relationship in order to finally heal it. It's that they're unconsciously driven to return to that site over and over again. And it is a good question why. And one of the interesting things that I've learned, or at least thought about from knowing his therapist, is his therapist, he was saying, look, the thing you also have to remember is that especially when repetition happens, when you're going back to similar feelings, or you find yourself being triggered over and over again in ways that take you to some place that seems very dark or very unpleasant, very challenging, is that in a perverse way, and that's the word to use, there's also a kind of enjoyment there. There's a kind of familiarity, a sort of like, I know this, I can feel this. There's a kind of power to it. There's a weird French word, jouissance, which is a very interesting term. It can stand for orgasm or for kind of intense, you know, pleasure, like the sort of pleasure that overwhelms your ego.
Yeah.
But some people also use it in a way to describe the kind of painful emotions that nonetheless have a certain appeal to them, that there's an enjoyment to them. And I remember I used this example when I was first introduced to this idea. It instantly made me think about this time I had terrible poison oak. It was all over my arms. It was really a bummer. And the only relief I could get would be to go into a scalding hot shower and put my arms right up next to the spigot. So it was just incredibly painful, but it was also really delicious. It was like scratching the worst itch you've ever had. You know, just like, oh, yeah, you know, and there's this weird place where pain and pleasure start to mix.
Yeah.
And we see people do that. Again, you take the example of the person who's always having a terrible relationship and they keep finding themselves in the same situation. When they're in that space, when they're, you know, they're complaining to you, they're wounded, there's sometimes it's like, you know, they like this in some way. There's something about us that likes that stuff too. And so that which I think is a shocking idea, it was shocking to me, shocking to a lot of people, but I think if you really are honest with yourself, and dealing with trauma requires as much honesty as possible, if you're really honest with yourself, then you got to look at the way in which you're kind of like bringing the stuff on. You're kind of choosing it in a certain way sometimes, because because you're sort of addicted to it, or it provides a sense of power or a sense of, now I know who I am. I'm the one who's always depressed. You know, this is familiar. It's sort of comfortable. This feeling again, you know. So it's like even that part where the idea that the trauma is something that we necessarily want to avoid, well, there's another side of that too.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like you said, they're seeking that painful trauma that they know because they actually have more fear about being able to let go of that story, that self-defining trauma, that shitty thing that happened to them. They're more willing to be that thing than to mentally accept or explore that they could actually potentially be something else or be more than that or be something other than that. You know,
yeah,
there's more fear there.
Because it's really scary. I mean, talk about trauma. One of the traumatic things about being a human being, at least according to some, you know, ways of looking at it, we all have different philosophies or whatever, but from an existential point of view, you know, to invoke a big philosophical term, from an existential point of view, one of the most traumatic things about human life is this quality of freedom. Not freedom like, oh, I get to vote for whoever, oh, I get to choose. Not that kind of freedom, but the radical freedom that we don't have to repeat, that we can be different, that there is something else that can happen. And to really look at that, it sounds great. You know, like, oh, of course I want to be happier. I want to change.
Right.
I want to be a more self-realized being. Okay, that's great. But to really get there, you have to pass through something that's much more like vertigo. Like, it's much more difficult. And, in fact, we, like you say, we run away from that into our repetitions, just the way a habit works. You know, we see ourselves doing this all the time. Oh, here I am once again eating the chocolate eclair, once again having the third beer. I didn't have to have that third beer, but I did, you know, because there's something frightening about real change.
Oh, no. And it's funny because having said the repeated to master thing, that's also the definition of insanity. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. So this is the problem. The problem is dealing with healing trauma in a real manner by engaging and addressing it is actually kind of the same thing as going insane. So you have to, like, take the crazy bullet and just accept that as part of going through and dealing with the trauma. You're going to go into crazy town, you know. Now you have to, like, do what you just said that everyone's afraid to. The reason you go crazy while you're doing it is because you have to discard and eliminate all of those things your ego is attached to and then get free. But that's, like, it's the most horrifying thing to people, man. They can't get free of their abusive partnership because they're too scared to be by themselves.
Right. Or they're, you know, actually locked into situations where they can't
do.
I mean, that's one thing. It's one of the things that's tricky about these conversations, and whether they're, you know, we're having them here or informally or with therapists or when we're thinking about them in our own minds, is there are always two sides to them in terms of the degree of freedom. So right now we're talking about how there is this way that we do have the capacity to leave, you know, terrible habits behind, or to integrate our traumas so that we stop just repeating them mindlessly, you know, that there is sort of a vector of healing. But there's another, you know, reality to trauma, which is that it's unavoidable, that
yes.
there are people
right.
in circumstances where they can't leave their partner. They can't. They
totally.
Really can't. No, no, no. The only way to leave is to commit suicide.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Or there are people who have clearly have neurological, central, you know, nervous system-oriented conditions that produce tremendous emotional, existential difficulty on a regular basis. And just saying, oh, no, you should go to a therapist, or, you know, you should swim with the dolphins, or you should, like, just get over yourself, man. Like, that is
yeah.
not even going to work. In
not
fact, it's
option.
Insulting.
Yeah,
and that's
totally.
Part of trauma, too, is there's a way
yes.
in which trauma is always going to go, it's always going to exceed our capacity to organize it, talk about it, deal with it, integrate it, and that's part of what we're living with, and that's part of what we don't know how to deal with, is that there's
yes.
always more. There's always
it's
more.
It's omnipresent. There's no, you can't, it's not something that's accomplishable, right? You can't, it's not eradicatable. You can't.
Yeah. And that's really
no
scary
solution.
Too, especially to our egos who like to be in control, who like to
yeah,
think that,
dude.
You know, and that's where, that's why I was, I, for me, it's really important to make that distinction between the freedom, like I can recreate myself and I can, you know, manifest my higher potential and all that sort of, you know, I can be happy by choosing to be happy. You know, we have a lot of that rhetoric in our world right now.
Yeah.
A lot of people think that if they get the right tools, they can just tweak and improve, and then everything's going to be okay. But
no.
that's not the kind of, you know,
no.
engagement
and
freedom
dude, so
that I'm talking
solution,
about.
Right. So for solutions to that, you look at races of people who have lived in traumatic conditions, like over extended periods of time, like hundreds of years, right? Like the best example of that is slaves. Dude.
Yeah.
Like, check out slavery. Like, how? What capacity did the Africans have that enabled them to survive under those kind of traumatic conditions for so long, right? And you look at what was it? What were they doing? Like, what did they do? I mean, really? I kind of think it's because they were singing is my only, like, explanation for how they were able to preserve their souls through those, like, everyday conditions of just seeing their families murdered, you know, raped, you know, just beat to crap from your body, like, you name the atrocity, that was it, and they would endure it, and then they'd still, they're still alive, like, so how do they do it, right?
Yeah.
How do nations of people undergo the Nazis?
Yeah.
You know?
No, it's, I mean, once you open up the door to, you know, really acknowledging historical trauma, it's just overwhelming, and yet
yeah.
there is something about human beings that, you know, we just keep trucking along.
We keep making
level,
it.
Which is just crazy. You know,
that it is, like, totally, like, you can do pretty much, like, any horrible thing to a person, and yeah, some of them might not make it. Like, some people are going to be like, all right, that's it for me, time to get off the ride. You know, that's like they'll hit their maximum capacity of their soul. And then other souls are just so gnarly. There's these souls, they can just, like, go through multiple wars, like horrible atrocities, and not only make it through, but still have the capacity to love and, like, laugh and tell jokes.
Yeah, I heard a guy on the radio the other day, and he was pretty old, and he was a child during the Holocaust, and he was talking about how he had discovered a photograph of a concentration camp, and I think it was a bunch of people who were just going to be about to be shot or were
wow.
had been shot, and he recognized his father.
Oh,
he
my
recognized
God.
His father, and
he sent
the image to his sister, and she said, yeah, that's dad. And then he had this thing where he just talked about, you know, that obviously that was that he has the picture on his wall. Every time
wow.
he looks at it, it's still powerful to him. But then he just had this sweet thing. But he goes, but I, you know, I live, I enjoy life. I live life to feel you know, engage with it and to do what I can to help other people live happier lives. And he really had that sense of authenticity. I mean, you could really tell this guy was no joke. You know, he wasn't putting on some kind of mask. And you're like, that's an amazing capacity. And I think one of the ways that we get there is that we do have to pay attention to the traumas, even the smaller traumas that we go through, and to really look at them. And that's probably where it seems like we ain't doing that good a job these days, because even though clearly there is a lot of serious trauma on the horizon and already in our face right now, I look out there and I just see all this distraction. I see all this useless sort of, you know, following little trending cornball, you know, cat jokes on the internet. I mean, it kind of blows me away. And it seems like by avoiding this stuff, you're just setting yourself up for a much greater fall and for not really being capable of going through stuff so that you can help other people who are even in more difficult straits. I mean, I sound like a cranky old man when I say that, but
no, I think paying attention is like really what it comes down to, dude. It's really just pay attention. What is going on? What are you feeling? How did that do? Like, what's happening now? Like, be aware of what is going on. Otherwise, you just get sucked into, like you said, all these distractions that will take you away from it. And then not only can you not handle your own thing, you can't help somebody else. You know, that's the thing. Like, even if there is the biggest trauma ever you can imagine that you have to go through, right? Like we said, you're guaranteed you're going to have a trauma, right? So what are you going to do? Well, if you pay attention, you just go through it. You can maybe help some other people through it. You can, like, keep on trucking. Right?
Yeah.
If you're not paying attention, you're going to get caught in the tidal wave.
Well, you know, before we were talking about kind of techniques, and I think that one thing that also helped that I learned from meditation is I was doing a lot of Zen meditation, and they're very insistent on not moving, right? So you're sitting there for 45 minutes with, you know, not moving. And when you do that, there's a lot of pain that happens, you know, and sometimes it's really painful pain. And so there's an interesting kind of dialogue about, like, well, I guess you're going to have to work with pain. What does that mean? Well, one of the things you do is you pay attention. And you realize that anything you pay attention to changes. Anything that you have curiosity about becomes more intelligent. Doesn't make it any easier, but it changes. There's this kind of quality. And so one of the things you do is you go, okay, what's actually happening? When sometimes, and physical pain is a really easy way to see this, and it's really kind of striking. Like, I'm like, oh my God, my knee is about to go. And then I go, okay, what's actually going on? Pay attention. Wow, you know, I'm feeling some tingly.
And how often do you pay attention to your knee?
I love that. That's like a good reason to meditate, so you pay attention to you. But you look at the stuff and you realize that what you thought, what your brain was labeling pain, is actually a kind of tingling sensation and da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
That doesn't mean sometimes that you shouldn't move your leg. You know, sometimes you are doing damage to your knee. So it doesn't answer the problem. You can't just escape it. But that happens psychologically, too. You know, I'm really upset with this. I'm really upset because you said this right now. Well, pay attention. Where does that pain go? What does that actually feel like? Well, maybe I'm not actually mad at you. I'm mad because whatever. And sometimes you can even see that it was something from the past or something from the other day. And then you go further into that. You go further into that. So there's a way in which paying attention and being curious can help shift the stuff. Even when it's just so in your face, you can't imagine anything is going to make it budge in iota. There's still the capacity to sort of, well, this is here now. What does it look like? What does it feel like? Where is the insecurity? Oh, wow. Behind the fear is anger. Behind the anger is insecurity. Behind the insecurity is a fear of death, you know, or whatever. I mean, there's these sort of ways that
there's
things
so
get contemplated.
There's so many levels to go through it. Yeah, totally, you know. And once you pay attention, you do. It's almost like you go on a little spelunking journey.
Well, and how about you? What about you? What's some stuff that you've come up with in your own process to handle this stuff?
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, a lot often the cards will put it on the table and they'll put these images in front of people, and just from seeing the image, like people will deal with it. It'll help, right? They'll come in. They don't know why is this pain coming from, and then we get the death card, right? So then they can they can see it. They can relate to it. They can, and it does. It puts it outside of themselves too, because here it's an archetype. It's a card. So it joins their suffering. It makes them aware of it, consciously aware, and then we go through and identify it, right? And it's like exorcisms, okay? How does Jesus get rid of demons? Well, you call it by its name, right? You say, oh, this is this, right? And then once you identify it, it's like you said, what does it feel like? What is it made of? You can kind of tell what it is, and then because our brains like to control so much, right? Because that's the thing. The freedom is the fear. If we can articulate it and put it into a thing, then it's you could start dealing with it. You can pay attention to it. You could say, oh, well, I have this goiter. I have to pay attention to this goiter. And, I mean, that can really accomplish a lot. And sometimes people just have to go through the emotion. They just literally haven't relived it. They keep trying to repeat it, but they won't allow it because they're trying to control it, so the repetition won't happen. And I can provide the space where they can just spill the beans. Sometimes that's all they need.
Yeah. Well, this has been a great conversation. I think we've got to wrap it up here. Any final words there, Maja?
Yeah, I think, for anyone who's dealing with trauma, which like we said is everyone, just watch yourself, pay attention, help other people through it, man. Make it through your trauma so you can help other people laugh and smile.
All right. All right, well, from me and Maja and all you out there, keep your minds open.